Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 22nd of August, year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll find out about the upcoming hockey season with Michelle Cocky and Arnold Liebelt from the Juneau Douglas Ice Association. Matt and Rachel Despain will be here to highlight this Saturday's Zip Fest. We'll talk to Jackie Manning from the Alaska State Museum about this year's Alaska Positive. And John Venables will give us the details about Friday's Wickersham Day Parade this Friday. That right is Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight looks like showers are likely with low temperatures around 52 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, showers likely with high temperatures around 57 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Department of Energy is gearing up for new one-time testing at a contaminated uranium site on the Wind River Reservation. A mill operated decades ago left groundwater with high levels of uranium, and the DOE is still monitoring it. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhorov reports.
Additional testing is supposed to help the Department of Energy update their computer model, which predicts progress of cleanup at the site. The Wind River Environmental Quality Commission, or REC, is happy about the additional testing. But Dave Hare, a one-time contractor with the commission, says there are some issues with the plan. For one, Hare says sample sites are too densely packed to actually locate the pollution plume.
They're just covering where they think the plume is instead of going out to the edges of it. We already know where the center is. So why do all this sampling there when we're looking for the edges?
Hare also says the DOE is not testing for enough constituents, is not looking at sediments, and did not wait for a still-pending report that is expected to analyze gaps in existing data. Rex Dean Goggles says the agency is still negotiating with the DOE regarding Rex's role in the work. Testing is set to start at the end of this month. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhorov.
U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius has toured South Dakota reservations for the past 2 days. She praised tribes for showing positive health moves despite challenges on reservations. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt has more.
Tribal leaders encourage state and federal officials to meet with them and tour reservations so the leaders can address concerns and demonstrate their programs. As Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius oversees the Indian Health Service. Sebelius spent Tuesday touring several programs on the Pine Ridge and Rosebud reservations in southern South Dakota. She says she's impressed with health care initiatives on tribal land, including an IHS hospital in Rosebud that promotes unique baby delivery methods and infant breastfeeding. Sebelius says she knows there are serious health issues on reservations, but she says the programs could have a positive impact. Sebelius toured an equine therapy program at Sintigleski University and visited Red Cloud School in Pine Ridge. She wrapped up her visit with a tour of the Cheyenne River Reservation today. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Alaska Native actress Irene Bedard, best known as the voice of Pocahontas in Disney's animated classic series, has launched Sleeping Lady Films Waking Giants Productions. The name of the Alaska-based company is on the story of a mountain in Anchorage about a giant woman who will awaken when the world is at peace. Bedard says it fits right in with the company's mission.
It's a production company that focuses on inspiring stories that feature Native characters, Native themes, Native stories that are inspiring, Alaska stories. And it's something just, I think, to be proud to say that we're here in Alaska.
Bedard says the company has several projects underway, one involving the Maori people of New Zealand, another is a Christmas story and a television series featuring a Navajo chef. On this day in 2006, a federal appeals court issued a final decision protecting the rights of Native voters in South Dakota. The The American Civil Liberties Union filed the suit Boneshirt versus Hazeltine on behalf of four Native Americans in 2001 after the state redrew boundaries. The suit argued the action disenfranchised Indian voters and violated the Voting Rights Act. South Dakota and 16 other states must get federal approval before making changes to their election laws and procedures. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is just about 3:06, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guest, we're here to talk about the Juneau, the hockey season, which begins next month, from the Juneau Douglas Ice Association, Michelle Kalki and Arnold Liebelt. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
First of all, could you describe to me what the Juneau Douglas Ice Association is all about?
Sure. The Juneau Douglas Ice Association promotes youth hockey in the great city of Juneau. So we have hockey programs for youth, boys and girls, from the ages of 5 through 18.
And you divide it into various categories?
Yeah, we basically have five tiers. We have the mites starting at the youngest age, and they're from 5 to 8. Then we have the peewees, ages 9 and 10. Or excuse me, from the mites are 5 to 8. The squirts are ages 9 and 10. And then the peewees, ages 11 and 12. Then on to the bantams, they're 13 and 14. And then midgets is basically the high school, ages 15 through 18.
And when does hockey season officially start?
Our first practice this year will be September 17th. And we have registration going on right now.
What's the season look like?
Every year, season looks great. We're pretty young. We've been an organization now for 10 years since the Treadwell Ice Arena has opened up. There's always new challenges, but it's always an exciting time of year. You know, the days start getting a little bit shorter. Evenings start getting a little cooler, and you can just feel, you know, hockey season's right around the corner.
And you have pre hockey camps as well.
Yes, we do. We just finished our first hockey camp, which is the Rocky Mountain Hockey School, a group of coaches and trainers coming up from Colorado. That was a fantastic camp. We had about 50 students, two different groups for that. They were here all last week as a five-day camp, 3 hours on the ice every day, off-ice training, dry land training. It was a great camp. And our second one is going to be...
let's see, September 10th, I think, is... September 10th through the 13th.
And that's our Steve McSwain camp. And Steve is coming from Anchorage. Steve is a great hockey player. He's great with the kids. This second camp is a real steal. It's $99 for 4 days on the ice. Anyone who's interested in registering to be part of that can go to the Juneau Douglas Ice Association website. Steve played for the NHL. He was on the Calgary Flames in 1986. He was on the U.S. national team. He played with the Anchorage Aces, and he's great with the kids, and he's a real skill-based. He really focuses on edge control, backwards-forward skating, really getting techniques down at the young age, so these kids really are proficient as they're growing up through the hockey program.
What other skills can kids develop other than hockey skills, life skills?
That's a great question, because and Michelle, you can add to this, but what we develop is more than just a hockey player. You know, we develop, we look at it in the entirety and developing respect. And we really, and our coaches and everyone really focuses on this, both their behavior off and on the ice. And when we're traveling as a team, you know, we're representing Juneau, and we're always aware of how we carry ourselves and how we communicate with others, how we respect our coaches, respect elders, respect other people, and things such as that. So that's a great question. Yeah, we're developing more than just hockey players on the ice. We're developing adults.
Yeah, and leaders, too. We have, you know, kids, our older kids are setting examples for the younger kids and teaching them, showing them examples in the locker room, how to, you know, be respectful of the facility. We have a great ice rink, and we need to take care of that and respect that facility, as well as on the ice, of, you know, being, you know, while you can... be a great skater, you also have to, you know, teach the other kids how to skate and not roll them over, I guess, too.
How much do the hockey camps run?
Well, the one coming up, McSwain, is, like Arnold said, is a great deal. It's going to cost $99, and that's a really...
That's a real steal
really,
for a hockey camp. I would like to mention that we are able to provide these very affordable camps thanks to the CBJ Youth Activities Grant. They are able to provide funding for us that we could pass the savings on to families here to bring that level of expertise to this town. And basically this is a level of skill of coaching that these kids would not be able to otherwise afford.
You know, having a free skate and gear swap this coming up Saturday?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have an annual event that we have every year. It's a learn to play hockey event. It's free. There's 2 hours of ice time, and we have it's welcome for any ages 5 to 18, for kids who are learning how, you know, want to try hockey. We have all of the gear. You just basically show up in some sweats, you know, and we have all the loaner gear available and helmets and sticks, and we'll have coaches there to teach the kids how to skate. And then, you know, depending on their level, we'll have little games going on the ice. And then this is our first year. That free ice time is Saturday from 3:30 to 5:30, and they can show up for any portion of that time. And then along with that is our first annual gear swap, our hockey gear swap. And that'll be going from 2:30 to 6. So kids who want to get some great hockey gear at a discounted price, that will be available. And if anybody has any gear that wants to donate it to JDIA, we'll welcome that also.
Should people get there any earlier if they have gear to donate?
If they want to donate gear, they can come to the rink anytime after 1 o'clock. We'll be setting up and getting ready. That would be great.
How much money can it go to set up hockey equipment for a parent?
Well, it depends. You know, for a beginner, you know, we don't, JDIA wants to make sure that any kid that wants to play hockey has the opportunity to. And JDIA, we've bought some loaner gear. So if a family wants to try hockey for a year, we'll, you make a deposit of $50 and we'll give you a bag of gear for your kid. And then at the end of the season, you can return the bag of gear and we'll return your $50. If a family wants to purchase their own equipment, I'd say probably we could probably get them set up for $150, $200.
Yeah, that's about right. But, you know, it's like with any sport. You can invest as much as you like and as little as you like. And luckily we have played against sports here. They've been really good with us and working with the Juneau Douglas Ice Association and selling used gear and buying used gear. Like any sport, you know, the problem is these kids, they grow so fast. And you constantly have to get new skates and new gear. And so, you know, things like this gear swap that we're promoting is really to help help encourage kids to skate and not let cost become an issue as to why they cannot be on the ice. Because the last thing we want is to see a kid who really has a desire to skate, but for whatever reason their family can't afford to have the program, which leads to another topic. And we do offer scholarships through Juneau Douglas Ice Association.
We do. On our website, there's information on our scholarships, and that's another way to help families if they, you know, if they can't afford to pay for our registration fees, that we offer that, and that is also supported through the CBJ.
How much is the registration fee?
Well, that depends on the age group. We, you know, for our kids that are starting out, I believe we have it at $99. It's what we call intro to hockey, and it's once a week, and we have great coaches. All of our coaches are volunteers. But as they get older and they get more ice time, some of our kids, as they're getting older, they're on the ice 4 times a week, opportunity to be on the ice 4 times a week, and our costs are, you know, up into, you know, probably around $350, $400.
And that's for, you know, so that's basically the opportunity for 3 to 4 sheets of ice a week from now through the end of April.
Mm-hmm. And we're also promoting, we have an early registration, which you can save about $50 by going to our website and registering before September 2nd.
All right, that website is?
Let's see here.
We have the
Google it.
you're actually better off probably going to Google and doing a search on Juneau Douglas Ice Association. We do have an address, but it's pretty lengthy.
All right, people need more information. Is there a phone number they could call?
Actually, they can call me. I'm the acting president at 586-2936.
All right. Michelle Cocky and Arnold Leibold. Thank you very much for coming down to the station and talking about the Juneau Douglas Association and hockey season, which begins next month. Free hockey camps and all that information can be found at Juneau Douglas Association's website. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
If you've never been out to the rink, we encourage you to come out there. There's a lot going out there between the Juneau Skating Club, the Juneau Adult Hockey Association, the Juneau Douglas Ice Association. There's other user groups, and it's just a great place to be. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Arnold and Michelle, thank you very much for being on the air with me today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 22nd of August, 2012. It's the birthday of Ray Bradbury, born Waukegan, Illinois, who on his 80th birthday said, "The great fun in my life has been getting up every morning and rushing to the typewriter because some new idea has hit me. The feeling I have every day is very much the same as it was when I was 12. It's the birthday of Dorothy Parker, born Dorothy Rothschild, Long Branch, New Jersey, 1893. Her mother died when she was young. Her father married a devout Catholic woman who Dorothy Parker despised. She dropped out of high school when she was 14. After the stepmother died and then her father died, Dorothy Parker wasn't sure what to do. She played piano at a dance academy. She tried writing light verse, sold a poem to Vanity Fair. Editor liked her. She became the drama critic there, wrote poems and stories. Robert Benchley, Robert Sherwood, two of her colleagues, the three of them started the Algonquin Roundtable. She wrote book reviews for The New Yorker. In 1934, she married her second husband, Alan Campbell. They moved to Hollywood and became screenwriters, successful ones. The two of them nominated for the Academy Award for the film A Star is Born. She became active in politics, labor unions, Spanish Civil War. She was put on the Hollywood blacklist in 1949 and stopped writing much at all. And toward the end of her life, she said of the Algonquin Roundtable members, "There were no giants, just a lot of people telling jokes and telling each other how good they were, just a bunch of loudmouths showing off. There was no truth in anything they said. It was the terrible day of the wisecrack, so there didn't have to be any truth." It's the birthday of the novelist Annie Proulx, born Norwich, Connecticut, 1935, who said, "Spend some time living before you start writing." She was in her 50s when she started writing fiction, a collection of short stories at first entitled Heart Songs, and 5 years later, her second novel, The Shipping News, was a bestseller in 1993. Her books include Accordion Crimes, Close Range, Wyoming Stories, and most recently, Bird Cloud, a memoir. Annie Proulx, who said, "What I find to be very bad advice is the snappy little sentence, 'Write what you know.' It is the most tiresome and stupid advice that could possibly be given. If we write simply about what we know, we never grow." Here's a poem for today by Jim Harrison, Night Creatures. The horses run around, their feet are on the ground. In my headlights, there are nine running down the highway, clack-clacking in the night, swerving and drifting, some floating down the ditch, two grays, the rest colorless in the dark. What can I do for them? Nothing. Night is swallowing all of us. The fences on each side have us trapped, the fences tight to the ditches. Suddenly they turn. I stop. They come back toward me, my window open to the glorious smell of horses. I'm asking the gods to see them home. A poem by Jim Harrison, Night Creatures, from Songs of Unreason, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Folk music. Looking for something fun to do on a Wednesday night? Then tune in to Friends and Neighbors 7 to 9 p.m. on KRNN 102.7. Hi, this is Mike Sicarius, host of Friends and Neighbors. Together we'll explore and enjoy the breadth of folk music from blues to ballads to banjos and much more. So kick back and relax this Wednesday evening with Friends and Neighbors 7 to 9 p.m. on KRNN 102.7.
Time is just about 3:21, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are here to talk about the Mountain Zip Fest, which is happening in Eagle Crest this Saturday from noon till 5 o'clock. Matt and Rachel of Spain, thank you for coming down to the station.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's really great to be here.
So if people haven't heard of Alaska Zipline Adventures, could you describe what your business does and what you're all about?
Well, we have a zipline canopy tour up at the Eagle Crest ski area. This is our 7th year in operation, and we couldn't be more thrilled to be up there working with Eagle Crest, taking people out into the forest and showing them a really unique perspective of the rainforest up there.
What is a zip line?
Zip line is kind of a traverse where people use a pulley and slide or glide across cables from one platform to the next through the forest. There are a series of 7 zip lines up there and a suspension bridge.
About how high off the ground are they?
They vary in height. The highest one is about 100 feet above Fish Creek. A lot of times you're zipping over the streams there, so it's pretty scenic.
Scary for the first ride?
Sure. You know, there's a little thrill about it, but we say it just takes a sense of adventure. It doesn't really, you don't have to be incredibly fit to do it, and our guides take really good care of people and make sure they, you know, help show them what they're doing out there.
Mountain Zip Fest is happening at Eagle Crest this Saturday from noon till 5 p.m. It's a benefit for Discovery Southeast. Thank you for doing that for the community.
Yeah, it's important to us. It's something we've always cared about, is giving back to our community. We feel really fortunate to have the opportunity that we do, but it's our job, I think, to give back. So we're really excited. Discovery Southeast is a wonderful organization that provides education to our local community, outdoor education to our local community, and we couldn't think of a better group to support.
And what ages is the event for?
It's all ages. It's super important to us that everyone knows it's a free admission. Everyone's welcome from 12 to 5 this Saturday up at Eagle Crest. But some of the activities will be for small donations that go directly to Discovery Southeast. Kids of all ages can come. The zip line that day, there will be 2 short zips that people can do for just $15. That's a really rare opportunity. So it's just 2 of the short zips, ages 7 and above. And normally our age is 9 and up. So just for these 2 short zips that day, younger kids can come. But for all other kids of ages, you know, all ages, we have things from face painting to kids' obstacle course, music by Terry Tibbett, and dancing, food, drinks, beer, all sorts of things will be happening up there that day.
Will the complete zipline package be available on Saturday as well?
It will. Now, that we have those tours kind of pre-booked and preset, so that's not a part of this event, but everything that we're donating that day to Discovery Southeast will be the 2 short ziplines, as well as a huge auction. We've had over 50 local vendors donating lots of things. Matt, I know you have some of the hot items that are being donated that day for the auction.
Yeah, the silent auction is going to be a really great opportunity to raise some additional funds for Discovery Southeast. We have things like flight seeing tours, helicopter tours, kayak rentals, smoked salmon shipped to anywhere in the U.S., passes to different organizations here in town, gift certificates to some of the best restaurants here in town, some backpacks donated by Foggy Mountain, and the list just goes on and on.
Live music by Terry Tibbett.
That's right. She's wonderful, and she's donating all her time and energy that day as well.
Can you go into a little bit more detail about how one gets snapped into the zip line?
Sure. Basically, we outfit everyone into a climbing harness and a chest harness as well. And then, without getting too detailed here, we use lanyards that clip into pulleys, and we have a dual cable system throughout our tours. So there's two cables, two pulleys, multiple backups for everything. And basically, everyone gets a safety briefing, and they have a sending guide and a receiving guide that accompany them through the tour.
It's a great place to take pictures as well.
Yeah, it's a really unique perspective up there of the rainforest, the mountains, and the streams below.
Want to go over again those activities on Saturday and talk about the prices, if you could, please?
Sure. You want to take that on, Matt? There's two short zips for $15.
And then we have things like food and drinks provided. We have some donors that have donated some of the food and drinks. We're going to be selling plates of food with a drink, as well as different activities like axe throwing, face painting, photo booth. The obstacle course, those things are going to be $5 per event that people participate in.
And Discovery Southeast is going to be actually running that kids' obstacle course. That will be a free event for kids, so that's pretty exciting. But otherwise, most things are $5. The food will be grilling, burgers and veggie burgers with all sorts of things. DiPAC is donating some of their smoked salmon dip, and they're bringing their fun salmon costume, Seymour the Salmon, up there. Someone will be wearing that and running around. Lots and lots of fun activities, but most of them are just for a nominal $5 donation to Discovery Southeast, with the exception of the zip line, which is just $15.
I want to know more about the obstacle course.
Basically, it's a salmon ladder obstacle course, and we haven't seen it yet. Discovery Southeast is going to be kind of hosting it, but it's supposed to be a real kid-friendly, educational salmon ladder obstacle course. That's all we know right now, and they are doing that for free. So, people should come up, come hang out. There's going to be a couple little free activities, like the music will be free and that, but then there obviously our goal is to help raise as much money as possible for Discovery Southeast that day.
And a brief bit about Alaska Zipline Adventures. You are normally open what hours?
In the summertime, it's hard to find us closed. But it's usually you can reach someone from 7 a.m. to at least 7 p.m. 7 days a week by calling us at 321-0-ZIP. Or you can stop by our downtown shop, which is across from the Baranoff on Franklin.
Do you have a special rates for locals?
Always. Almost half off the tourist price, so it's a really big discount. Locals can come up anytime for just $85. We take groups of people out all the time, company parties, Boy Scout groups, you name it.
All right. I've been talking to Matt and Rachel Desvane about the Mountain Zip Fest happening in Eagles this weekend, Saturday from noon till 5 p.m. It's a benefit for Discovery Southeast. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Oh, no. We really appreciate you having us on here, Jeff, and we're just excited to get the community out. Hopefully people will come, rain or shine, and use it as an opportunity to come check out Eagle Crest in the summer and support Discovery Southeast.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity to be on here. We really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure, and we just wanted to thank all of our sponsors and donors for the event.
And thank you for coming down to the station.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It happened on one of them zippity-doo-dah days. Now, that's the kind of day when you can't open your mouth without a song jump right out of it. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. My, oh my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine heading my way. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. It's the truth. It's actual. Everything is satisfactory. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. Wonderful feeling, wonderful day. Yes, sir. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. My, oh my, what a wonderful day.
Oh, plenty of sunshine in the way.
Mr. Bluebird's on my shoulder. It's the truth,
mm-hmm.
It's actual. Everything is satisfactory. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. Wonderful feeling this way.
South Walt Disney Productions. The time is 3:30. You are tuned into KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest here to talk about Alaska Discovery. They're from the Alaska State Museum, Mary Irvin and Jackie Manning. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having us. Our pleasure.
A little bit of history about Alaska Positive. This is its 40th year.
Yes. It started in 1970. So, and it's now... Yeah, it's going to be Alaska Positive 2012, and we just opened it up for submissions, and it's going to be open until September 22nd, and we're going to do two rounds of submissions this year. The first round is going to be from digital entries, and those are all due September 22nd, and then on October 15th, the photographs that are selected will then be printed and exhibit ready, and then when the juror, Holly Anders, is in town, she will do the second and final juring.
And the digital process these days?
Well, this is our first year doing this, so the reason that we're doing it is because it's I think it's going to be easier for the photographers, at least for cost, for shipping, because in the past we've always done it that all the photographs are sent from all over the state, and they have to be exhibit ready from the beginning, so printed and matted, and then the ones that are selected, we then frame at the museum, and then those are the ones that go into the show, and then the other ones get sent back. So I think having this two-step process is going to be it's going to be easier for photographers from all over the state. So,
and this is a statewide photographic exhibition.
It is. It's work from photographers, Alaskan photographers from all over the state, and it's open subject, but they need to be Alaskan photographers is the only rule there.
Any idea how many average entries there are each year?
I want to say in 2010, we got somewhere between 75 and 85 entries, and 44 photographs were selected from, I think it was 35 photographers, and that was a large show. This year, I think it'll be about there, or maybe a little bit less. We'll see.
Mary Irvin from the Alaska State Museum. You've seen a few of these Alaska Positives rolled through town here. Do you have anything to add?
Well, you know, I'm not a big, huge photography fan myself, but I've learned something from every single Alaska Positive juror. I watch them as I walk through the galleries, sort of making sure things are okay, that how they do their juroring, and it's different for each juror. So it's really kind of an interesting process. And one of the funnest things about this process is that, there's a lecture associated with this by each juror that comes through to give us even more insight about the process itself. So... I forget the date for our lecture. Is it Tuesday, October 17th, I think, at 7?
It's a Wednesday.
I believe it's a Wednesday. I think so. And she'll be doing her lecture here in Juneau at 7 p.m., and then on October 19th, she's going to be giving a lecture in Anchorage at the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Want to tell me a little bit more about the juror, please?
Yeah, her name is Holly Andrus, and her work has been exhibited all over the country, as well as in Istanbul. Major magazines that have featured her work include Art in America, Art Forum, Art News, The LA Times has included her work, and she has been acknowledged by Art Latitude as one of the 15 emerging West Coast artists under the age of 35. And I've been asked how the jurors get selected, and one thing that we've been doing recently is we've been asking the previous juror who they recommend, and so last time around in 2010 it was Richard Ross, and this was his recommendation as a very strong photographer and juror. So we asked her, and she was excited to come up to Alaska. So
someone once told me that if you want to be in, heighten your chances of getting into the Alaska Positive Show or any one of these jury shows, just look at the jurors and put photographs and find out what the juror likes to take pictures of themselves.
You know, I think Richard Ross may have brought that up last time, and I think everybody looks for something different, and you know, as far as of, I think his comment was, you know, what the intent of the photographer's intent, and then if that was successful or not. But you can look up Holly Anders' work at, I'll spell it out, it's HollyAnders.com. And she has a beautiful website that has, it shows different series of her works. And I think it's going to be great to have her here in town. And besides the lecture that she'll be giving on October 17th, we are also going to have a youth activity associated with Alaska Positive. And Ron Klein and M.K. McNaughton are going to be involved with helping put that together. So I don't have a date as of yet, but it should be coming up once Alaska Positive is up this winter.
That's pretty exciting. Kids always get a kick out of learning a little bit more about photography and working with the experts, you know. So yeah. Ron Klein and M.K. McNaughton are just primo on that. So
yeah, it's good. They're great.
I'm talking with Mary Irvin and Jackie Manning about the Alaska Positive Entries a photo competition, which is the 40th annual one. It's happening here in the capital city. How many people from Juneau usually take advantage of the have been selected?
You know, we've had. I was looking back over the previous award winners, and Juneau's always right in there as far as their. You know, we have a strong representation of photographers, and the last go around in 2010, three Juneau photographers were given honorable mention: David Riccio, Buddy Ferguson, and Kenneth Moriarty. And then in 2008, Ben Huth received the second place award and Deanna Lamp the third place award. So, and you can go, you know, going back over the years, Ron Klein received the Juror's Choice Award in 1984 and Mark Dottie in 1987. And anyway, so Juneau has always done well in Alaska Positive. And there will be two awards that, three. There will be the Juror's Choice Award, which is a $300 prize, and then there will be two awards of recognition, which each give $150. So, and that's sponsored by the Friends of the Alaska State Museum.
Want to go over the rules one time, and especially the digital submission rule?
Yes. So, again, it's going to be a two-part process, and the initial judging will be from digital entries, and then once those are selected, we'll notify the photographers, and then a final judging will be from exhibit-ready artwork, which will be printed and matted. As far as the submitting the your digital images, we've got our entry form on our website, and it's an enterable PDF. And then we also have some right at the museum here, so you can come and pick them up. And I've passed them out to a few places around town, so the Canvas and the City Museum. And as far as accessing them online, our website is www.museums.state.ak.us. And, you know, if you have any questions as you're filling out the entry form, don't hesitate to call me, Jackie Manning, at the State Museum, 465-4819, and I can walk you through it if you're getting confused.
The deadline is?
The first round, the deadline is September 22nd, so we've got about a month to get those in. And they needed to be submitted on a CD, and all the specs for the image size are are on that entry form.
All right, Jackie Manning and Mary Irvin, thank you very much for coming down to the station today. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I just wanted to add that you were both right. October 17th is a Wednesday for the lecture at 7 p.m. of Holly Andrus for the, she's the Alaska Positive Juror, and we're pretty excited to have her here. She's got that great website, and I encourage everybody to go there.
Hopefully she'll have enough time to be on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jeff.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And when my life
on your mark, get set, go! Join Cancer Connection on Saturday, August 25th for the Beat the Odds Women's Race Against Breast Cancer. Pre-register before noon on August 24th for the 5K run or 2-mile walk at the following locations: Foggy Mountain Shop, Pavitt's Health and Fitness, JRC The Alaska Club, and Nugget Alaskan Outfitter. You can also register the morning of the race, which starts at 9 a.m. on August 25th at Riverbend School. Together we can beat the odds. This message brought to you by Cancer Connection. Thank you.
3:49, and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is John Venables. He's also been known as John Muir, William Sword, and also James Wickersham. John, thank you very much for coming on the station today.
Good afternoon, Jeff. Nice to be with you today.
So tell me about your latest project coming up this Friday.
This Friday is a state official day of honor where all citizens are to celebrate and observe the birth anniversary of Judge James Wickersham, and we're having a parade, and we're going to be marching and driving and riding up Franklin Street We start at 11:45 a.m. The staging time is 11:30 a.m. Any of my friends who would like to be on the television documentary should show up at 11:30 so we can get them part of the documentary that is in the making. We're going to be delivering an official proclamation from Mayor Bruce Botello declaring the day of celebrating Judge Wickersham's birth anniversary. We intend to stop for about 4 or 5 minutes at the state capitol. If there's any friends there that want to come out and see the proclamation. After that, we head up Main Street to 7th Street to deliver this proclamation to the House of Wickersham. Supposed to be some birthday cake and coffee available. If I could find a cook at the last minute to make some sourdough waffles and tasty bacon, I'd hire them right on the spot. So that was the judge's favorite breakfast, supposedly an aroma that permeates the house, even to this day, of sourdough waffles and tasty bacon, which Ruth Allman served up for probably 20 years to tourists.
Tell me about Judge James Wickersham, please.
Yes, House of Wickersham, it's something like 213 7th Street.
Tell me about the judge.
The judge, he was the most prominent Alaskan of the first third of the 20th century. He came here in 1900 as a federal judge, being the first judge in the interior of Alaska. He brought law and order, civil government, to a violent and lawless and corrupt area. And then he was first elected delegate to the U.S. Congress. He served 14 years over a 20-year period, and he has done so many famous things. His name is on so much. He is the founder of the University of Alaska. He got the $50,000 from the Congress and established the first foundation for the university. He is the one responsible for codifying all the laws of 1867 to 1920, which is the basis of all our legal documents. He researched every law that was in treaty and announcement that was made, and a bunch of other things, too. So the proclamation has about six things that say whereas and whereas and whereas and whereas, and therefore we should celebrate this day, which is one of our main goals. There's two state holidays, Seward's Day and Alaska Day, and there's about 10, 15 days of honor. And I would say, dare say, that nobody in Juneau could tell me the names of all the days of honor. But I pick on three, Seward, Wickersham, and Bob Bartlett. We do something, if at all possible. Thanks for allowing me to share this with the Juneau Radio audience.
John Venables, you've been on stage numerous times portraying some of these characters. What's people's reaction to your show?
Oh, I have wonderful audiences. My tours have taken me to over 25 towns around Alaska. I've given the program more than 125 times, and I have all audiences, age group. There could be schools, museums, libraries. My favorite age group happens to be fifth grade. The fifth graders really grab onto it. You know how it is with your activities. You know, you get these younger kids, they really, really get involved and they want to learn everything, watch everything. And I've had some wonderful experiences. It's a non-paying job, so we're not interested in making money, but we want to cover our expenses if at all possible.
And you've had recently triple bypass surgery?
I did have an incident in May of 2011, and I got through it pretty good. I had three clogged up arteries, and I got through it pretty good. I was up in the Delta Junction, Fairbanks area, and the operation was in Anchorage. But doctors grounded me for a year. They said no travel. So I cooperated with them, but we're back on the road again. I'm a new man. In case you can't notice it, I'm about 35 pounds less than I was 15 months ago. So I'm almost like a teenager.
Tell me about your Washington, D.C. trip.
Oh, the Washington, D.C. was a wonderful highlight in 2009. I couldn't do everything that I wanted to do, but I did get an invitation to give my one-hour program at the Library of Congress, James Madison Building, Mary Pickford Theater, and it was a wonderful, wonderful trip. I wish you were on that trip with me. I had two trips to the White House sightseeing, two trips to the U.S. Capitol, met with our both our U.S. senators, who were wonderful hosts, and there was the Supreme Court, and there was three of the Smithsonian Museums. My experiences there, I've got a very nice television documentary of that trip that is really kind of heartwarming. I'll always be grateful to KATH-TV for the documentary that was done on this. It's available on their website archives even to this day.
I'm talking with John Venables, who's been working on making a parade for the Judge James Bickersham Day, which is on Friday. Parade details one more time, John, please.
The parade will start staging time at 11:30 a.m. by the Red Dog Saloon area. 11:45 is the kickoff. We'll be at the state capitol about 5 to 12. And after 5 minutes at the most, we're on the road again to the House. Wickersham, everything will be over by 12:15, 12:30 at the latest. We're supposed to have some birthday cake and coffee. And whether I have sourdough waffles or bacon, I can smell the bacon just thinking about it.
John, thank you very much for coming by.
Yes.
Time is just about 4 o'clock. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. The Valley and Ock Bay area tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. An excursion inlet in Icy Street, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. Also live online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow at 3 o'clock on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with organizers of Saturday's dinner and auction benefiting Helping Hands. We'll learn about the Juneau Lyric Opera's upcoming production of Hairspray. Ann Schroeder and Joanne Gartenberg will discuss the stress reduction program at Partlet Regional Hospital. Nancy DeGeni will give us the rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. At Writer's Almanac Music and More tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Forecast for tonight looks like showers in the forecast. The temperatures are 51 degrees, southeastern winds to 10 miles per hour. Showers likely predicted for Thursday. Friday looks like mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain, and night temperatures around 59 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you very much for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today. And it's the music of Paul Rosenthal with Alaska's Flag Song.
online summer school program with mixed results for students.
Well, my friends are sophomores. I'm a freshman. That's just embarrassing. I want to be in the right grade with my friends where I'm supposed to be. So lesson has definitely been learned.
Plus a glimpse of the nightlife in Shanghai and a farewell to Bird Talk magazine. Those stories coming up in this hour. First, this news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. A new survey finds most middle-class Americans blame Congress for their economic woes. As NPR's Jennifer Ludden explains, the banks come in a close second.
The Pew Research Center finds 85% of self-described middle-class Americans say it's harder now than a decade ago to maintain their standard of living. The report calls the 2000s a lost decade for the middle class, a time in which its ranks continued to shrink while its median wealth dropped 28%. After Congress and the banks, Pew finds middle-class Americans also blame their economic plight on large corporations and foreign competition. More blame the Bush administration than President Obama, while just 8% blame middle-class people themselves. Pew finds a slight majority of the middle class believes Mr. Obama's policies would help them more than Mitt Romney's. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News, Washington.
Federal Reserve officials appear to be more anxious about the direction of the economy and more willing to take steps to bolster it if need be. That's based on minutes from the Fed's last meeting in which policymakers seemed to indicate support for the economy would be needed fairly soon unless things turn around. Minutes also show some Fed officials would favor pushing the timetable for keeping interest rates low. The Taylor Bridge wildfire in Washington state is now 90% contained, but as Sarah Lerner of member station KUOW reports, fire managers say they hope to get it 100% under control by the weekend.
There's just one small area left, only a few hundred feet in a tricky canyon. Fire Command spokesman Mick Mueller says Hidden Valley is the most challenging piece of the fire.
It is extremely rocky. It's extremely steep, convoluted terrain. The wind is a real bugger in this one, and it's, you know, a bunch of brambles and all kinds of things. It's really difficult to work in.
Firefighters' other major concern? Traffic. Many residents are finally able to return home, and Mueller says he's worried the narrow roads will be clogged up while fire engines and water trucks are still trying to get through. Once residents are able to get home, fire crews are asking them to stay there. For NPR News, I'm Sarah Lerner in Seattle.
Still far from clear whether it will pose a threat yet, but weather forecasters